me.
Yeah, there it is. When that robot comes in, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, oh, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you are on some sort of archaeological dig right now with us in your ear hole. That's an inside joke. whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free, thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They are the coolest of the cool. They are the folks that make this show possible. Their generosity, their support means we get to keep making these. You can be one of them at patreon.com/DLCpod. And if you are, you get some cool stuff in return, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, although not this week. And you also get bonus content galore. Oh my gosh, so much bonus content. You got your audio version of the DLC Book Club with Lana Bashinsky and myself talking about the Melazin Books of the Fallen. So much fun. You've got Feeling This on Feeling This Fridays, where Alex Solman and Christian Spicer talk about the feelings behind video games. Those shows are amazing. You've got an entire first season, second season happening now. Get in on that on Feeling This Fridays. Plus, the Wednesday paid DLC program, where Lana Bashinsky joins Christian Spicer and myself talking about all kinds of crazy nonsense, making you giggle, talking about stories from our past, and sometimes flatulence. You never know. You never know what's going to come up. It's all there for our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, we're the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Canada, spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis. The guy who is on an endless, nonstop, varied vacation, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, live from Tahoe. I swear my life is not, I am not out this often. This
I beg has been, to differ, friend. It's a new, where in the world is Carmen Sandiegoing this summer? That's what you are.
In the world is Christian's Pillow Fort. I will be back to my regular setup and microphone next week. I apologize. My audio again is different this week. I am in a new Pillow Fort. Patrons enjoyed seeing my toilet fort from New York, so I will probably share my pillow fort picture over on Patreon this week as well. But video versions of shows will be back next week. I'll be back in my regular studio, and I apologize for any kid yelling or dog yelling that you might hear during this episode. I am happy to be here. Tahoe is gorgeous. I feel very lucky and fortunate, and I'm excited because I've been playing some great games this week, my friend. Some great games.
Yeah, well, let's get into it. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. Oh, but this week, we are excited because once again, DLC stands for deciding where you lean as you continue. Because we have the co-founder of Point in Progress. You've seen him on IGN, Kinda Funny, GameSpot, What's Good, and right here on this very program as well, it's our friend Mario Rivera back with us. Hey, Mario.
Oh boy, I'm so happy to be here. I'm very happy that you got your pillow fort. I of course come from the Jurassic period again, but I'm happy to be here with the boys talking video games.
We love it, man. We got so much to dig into this week. Some interesting news percolating, some very sad news for me percolating as well. And the hits just keep on coming. This year of 2024 is nonstop. Even when you think there's going to be a few weeks where we're waiting for the big releases. Well, guess what? There's big releases. It's big releases all the time. You can't stop them. And we're going to talk about them. So let's get right into it and start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We love getting email from you. You can send us email about anything you like. We love hearing from you. Comments, questions, suggestions of games to play. Oh, we love getting them. dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We also love reading the communities talking to each other and talking amongst themselves, talking with us. And there's two places you can do that. One is our subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. And the other is our Discord, which is also 5x5dlc on Discord. Lots of great folks hanging out. I urge you to take part. But Mario, you're our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
You know, after sort of looking into what's going on with this Project L story and this with the fighter, this is actually something I'm shocked that has not have happened yet. So yeah, I'm going to talk about the Riot showing off their new fighting game. That's
yes. My interesting story. Riot, of course, breaking off League of Legends, the brand, into all sorts of new different kinds of games, new genres. I think a very, very smart decision. They've got this huge stable of characters with lore written. And, you know, we've already seen awesome anime style TV show, Netflix show. They're really doubling down on their IP, which I think is such a wise decision. You know, League of Legends, obviously a MOBA. MOBAs, I think, maybe falling out of vogue a bit, but I think they're smart in branching off all these characters and making this rich stable of characters live on in other kinds of games. One of which, Project L, which we don't think will be its final name, is going to be a 2D fighter in the style of Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat. And it is inching closer to release. And they have a big announcement this week. One of the things they announced is that there will be a playable demo at EVO for folks to try out the game. And they showed off a big new feature, which is what Mario is referring to. The game has, we've known for a while that it was going to be a 2v2 tag-based fighter in the vein of a Marvel versus Capcom or those kind of games where you can tag in other characters. But now they have revealed that not only will it be 2v2 character-wise, it will be 2v2 player-wise, or 1v1 or 2v1 even. They're supporting multiplayer and cooperative teams so that individual players can control individual characters. So you're literally joining a tag team with another player, and the two of you can use your two characters in a variety of ways. They showed off different options even before the fight start to customize how your interactions will work. So there'll be some options there, and a variety of ways to tag in and tag out, save the active player. They likened it to wrestling, professional wrestling tag teams, where one player is in and actively fighting and another player can jump in or be tagged in to assist or to team up. Mario, what did you think of what they showed? They showed quite a lot of this. And you know, they released a full video of four of the devs playing a 2v2 match. And there will be a big demo at EVO for folks to you know, try it out for themselves with four of the characters that will be part of the roster available there. So what did you make of this? It sounds like you were intrigued.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually thought of this as a actual game concept for many, many years. Like, why couldn't I have a tag team partner in a way that's like this and sort of like you're saying, like the Mortal Kombat Street Fighter way? Like, I can't think of another game that allows for that as like sort of like the function of the game. And so when I saw that, they're like, yeah, so you can tag. They spoke my language, Jeff. They said tag team wrestling.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, yeah, okay. Now you're speaking, where I can tag in at the right moment and then someone can do a combo with their character and then possibly tag me back. And like all the different ways that could work actually intrigued me as a game mechanic.
Will I be able to just crawl slowly toward the edge of the screen and have the crowd chant and then at the last minute lunge and tag my teammate who comes in hot?
That's right.
That's what I want.
Yeah. The cheap heel move, absolutely. Yes, please. Can I do that? Or for people just starting out with fighters, that makes the most sense too. But yeah, like I've been playing games like obviously Marvel versus Capcom for years, obviously Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, and then for them to sort of put a nice twist on that formula and given that a little bit of a distinction for this game, I think is awesome. League of Legends is a series that I'm not particularly the most well-versed in. Really, my major introduction was Arcane. Arcane really, in my opinion, broke the door wide open in terms of showing me this world and the different, you know, things you could possibly do with it. And for them to then move past the MOBA stuff into the different projects, for this to be just like, to me, a no-brainer, a fighting game with all of the roster of people, this gets me very excited to learn more about these characters, learn more about this world, and to also have this, you know, fun, you know, Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy tag team fighter. So.
Yeah, the Usos, the Hardys. If I had to venture a guess as to why we've never seen this as a feature before in games that have had tag-like options, you know, setting aside any kind of technical difficulty it might provide, which I think is not insignificant, but setting that aside, I would suspect that my worry, at least, would be that the player who is not active is just sitting there waiting to be tagged might not have as much fun. And you could have a situation where one player kind of dominates, and if they are the one who has the responsibility to tag in the other player and the other player can't choose to tag in themselves, you just kind of sit there waiting to have some fun. I wonder if there are ways that they've mitigated that, or actually I'm more curious, Mario, if you anticipate that as being a problem or you don't think that would be not fun.
I think what they could do definitely is just add stipulations or different modes to that fighting game that will make it so that way you have to be on a balance of being able to do sort of a 2v2 sort of situation, whether it being you're allotted for this amount of time and there's this damaging is going to not be as high as if you were still in the match and you need to recuperate or something like that. I'm curious how they go into that. They don't really necessarily go into fully the mechanics of the game other than showing off the devs sort of playing it. And I'm curious if there are going to be more modes past just the 2v2, 1v1, you know, 2v1 stuff. But I think that there are definitely things that they could do to make it interesting. And that's the thing that gets me the most excited, is the fact that they could add flavors. And even, like, for instance, if this becomes a crowd favorite game, I could see crowd play or things on Twitch for people that are playing live and how they could interact with the game in some way. Like, I was watching Kind of Funny play Cuphead on with this mode for crowd control where the crowd got to choose different actions that would happen in the game, like send them to the tutorial or, you know, flip the screen upside down. I can imagine the crowd automatically switches the fighters and then it just causes more chaos. Like, I can see a lot of fun with what they are doing, especially if it, like, pulls up an audience.
Christian Spicer, I believe there has been a past that I can recall where my sick Wolverine Spider-Man combo gave you some trouble in Marvel vs. Capcom. But what if, Christian, what if we could be on the same side?
It's funny because I don't think we have that on video, but I do think we have on video me destroying you in Street Fighter. So, you say one thing, but I have HD quality video proof of you talking smack and then me owning you with my Honda. So, I mean.
But then immediately after that, did I not beat you twice in a row?
I don't have that on video.
The video cuts off right there.
So, I mean, even on the raw tape, it's not there. So, whatever. Talk is cheap. As someone who played a lot of rec league basketball back in the day and pickup basketball, I will tell you there is nothing more fun than playing on a team with a ball hog. It always feels good to have Johnny pass me the ball. Oh, man. You always wanted to take the shot. Always wanted to be the star. I mean, I think you raise a good point, Jeff. And I do think, how fun is it to be the player who is not playing? I think Mario makes some great points that there are some modes that could be built around this idea of switching, kind of like, again, going back to rec leagues, that, you know, your team needs to be made up of so many players over 50 and they have to play, and or so many men and so many women. And like in rec sports, you often see this makeup of the ball needs to go through your oldest player's hands or something like that, where they try to make it so you don't just have two people running the show all the time and distribute that talent.
my 6-year-old's basketball league, you have to pass twice before you can shoot.
Yes.
That's the
yes.
rule. Yeah.
So I think there's cool stuff like that that could happen. What I find interesting about Project L, and also about the other system they've talked about recently, the Fuse system, which is kind of how you can use that tag team partner, I think, when you are controlling both players, a la Marvel versus Capcom or some of those old versus style games, I think it's interesting to have witnessed Project L talked about as a fighting game for everyone and trying to further break down the barriers of the fighter, which I think Street Fighter VI tried to do with their modern controls. And it seems like that is a hurdle that fighting games are trying to constantly trying to jump over again since the death, quote unquote, of arcades, where fighters kind of ruled the day in the 90s. How do they become that big dog, everybody plays these game style of game? And I think on one hand, Project L is talking about trying to bring more people in, free to play, this easy to play, perhaps hard to master fighting system. But the more they talk about stuff like duo play, which I think is cool, or the Fuse system that allows you to choose how your players come in together and what those power-ups may or may not be, I think that adds a layer of complexity that might intimidate people who would otherwise be interested in it. If I come in and play and all of a sudden you do two power-ups back to back and I didn't know you could do that. And so that's where I think it's interesting. I'm curious, as Riot expands into other genres, what the profitability needs to be for Valorant, which continues and it seems to be going strong, but I doubt, and I could be wrong, this is speculation on my part, I don't think pulls in the money that League of Legends pulls in, you know? And so what does Project L need to be a success for Riot, and how mainstream of a game does it need to be, or is something on par with Street Fighter VI, which is big, don't get me wrong, big, great game. I think it should be mentioned for Game of the Year at the end of the year, most likely. But it's not pulling in a billion viewers, you yeah. know, the way league tournaments do. So I'm very curious about Project L.
Yeah, the Fuse system seems very interesting as a strategic layer. And I agree with you that it could add some complexity. I mean, the way it is described in this video, they only show off one of the Fuse options, which they're calling 2X Assist, which according to the video, this is the quote from the video, it allows your team to throw out two assists back to back instead of just one with each champion, instead of just one with each champion having two assists and some of them being chargeable. There's a lot to discover, but you can always change your Fuse for the next match to find out what feels right. I like the idea of discussing with my teammate what we're going to do beforehand. This feels like something that you don't really want to play pickup, you know, which is, I think, why it's smart that they also allow 2v1, where it's not, you're not playing two characters versus one character. You're playing two people controlling two characters versus one person controlling two characters. So it's more like the old, you know, traditional tag teams, fighting games like Marvel versus Capcom. So I think that's interesting. I think it promotes people who already have trust and a relationship, because you're not forced. It's not like you're playing a MOBA where you can only play 5v5, you know, and you have to have humans. And so you're going to be queuing up with probably some folks you don't know in a lot of cases. It doesn't seem like that's the impetus here. It does feel like if you're going to play with another human, you probably want to know them already, which is interesting. I also noted in the discussion video that they specifically called out what a difficult design challenge this has been and how much work they've put into it, which I think speaks to kind of all the problems or issues that we have identified as well. It just feels like they've put a lot of thought into this and they feel pretty confident that they've solved some of those issues. I'm curious to see what the reaction from Evo is going to be when people get their hands on it, because that's the audience that they want, right? That's the hardest of the hardcore fans and players, contestants, you know, that will be there at the competition. So if they can win those folks over, I think that's a good sign. We will know more, you know, very soon.
Sorry, I say that they certainly, again, League is still so popular and makes so much money that it's not oh man, Riot's betting the farm on this one. You know, will this be the game that bankrupts Riot? No, it will not. No, and they have the time to make it right.
Certainly won't. And then hopefully if this does blow up, they have I just looked this up, 163 characters that they could
that's a lot monetize. Of fighters, potentially.
You know?
I also am curious if the business model for all these League of Legends spinoffs is free-to-play. It'll be interesting to see if all these launch as free-to-play games or... I mean, I think there's already been some, you know...
There's at least four games right now. Valorant, obviously, the League MOBA, but then there's also the card game. There's also the different stories that are like collectible games, and there's like actually like an RPG out, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there's been a number of really excellent games, honestly. So I hope this one is as well. I love the art style. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
So we'll find out more about Project L. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
I'm going to piggyback off of your story from last week, or maybe it wasn't your story, but it was your story. And so if you haven't listened to that, last week we talked about, you brought up Glorbo.
I can't wait for Glorbo.
Oh, I'm so excited. And how Glorbo was finally coming to World of Warcraft. And what Glorbo was, if you haven't listened to last week's episode, was nothing. And it was created by folks to see if it would get picked up by these AI content-driven sites that are scraping Reddit for whatever it can and then creating stories out of them and clearly written by AI bots. And it's just the dregs of the internet, in my opinion. Well, yes, Glorbo is coming to World of Warcraft. It was picked up on. Stories were created from it, from these AI content farm sites. And now Destiny 2 players are jumping on the Glorbo train. And so they talked about Glorbo not being a new feature, but being a secret boss, with posts like Glorbo killed my grandma. I can't wait for Glorbo fight in season 23. The hardest battle I'm ever going to encounter is against Glorbo. I'm astonished by how well Bungie has slipped Glorbo into the most recent lore book on the Bungie store. And like all of this stuff that, again, is just talking about it in a way that is very non-specific. I mean, Glorbo killed my grandma, but in a Destiny forum where this stuff is being, otherwise the game is being discussed seriously, but then these very in on it style jokes. And Jeff, what do you think? Do you think this worked again, or do you think the AI learned and it's not going to talk about Glorbo anymore?
It 100% worked.
Yes, it did. Glorbo is coming to Destiny 2, depending on where you read online. And you might be like, why don't I have it in my update yet? Why don't I have Glorbo? And so the reason I wanted to bring this up is, one, the Destiny community, I think, is fantastic on so many fronts. And I think what Bungie does with the community is fantastic, and the charitable efforts. And, you know, it is a thriving community all these years later. So I think it's important to bring that up, but also the idea of more communities kind of getting behind this idea of, you know what, this style of content isn't what we are looking for. And the way the internet age reacts to that is with some friendly griefing, I think. And this falls in that lane of friendly griefing. We talked on shows past about, you know, actual hate that comes out of the internet sometimes. And that is not good. Again, to be clear, foot down, not good. But this style of antic of, you know, poking fun at the machine that is trying to create content for whatever eyeballs, anywhere they can find them, scraping AI to write these garbage posts like this, I feel like is good internet pranking. And I wish that when I saw the Destiny 2 Glorbo stuff online, I would have assumed that it wouldn't have worked. I wish I could have thought that, but of course not. Of course not. Of course it still works. And Glorbo is coming to Destiny 2. That's my story. I love it. I love it.
It is cool that Glorbo is becoming shorthand for this thing, right? Glorbo is the code word that the internet has accepted as being, it's code for your site has crappy practices. You know, your news site is garbage, and we're going to show you why with Glorbo. And Glorbo is going to be, you know, live by the meme, die by the meme, I believe, is the new internet of today. And it, you know, it remains depressing to me that this exists. And I think this is the ha ha, look how silly it can be version. But what it exposes is that, oh, also serious things and potentially world-shaping things are also this easily manipulated. You know, this,
because I see this and I know it's garbage, but I see some other headline about carbonated water kills you. And I don't, you know, that's garbage, you know, right. Like,
yes, it's just so easy to flood the channel with nonsense. Look at how easy it is to flood this particular channel. You know, it just makes everybody lose confidence in everything. And when there's no truth, then, you know, tyranny wins.
These are not highly trained.
Toxic for you?
I read it on X. So I know it must be true, Mario. It's on. If I can't trust X, what can I trust?
It didn't have a promoted thing at the bottom, so it must be real.
It had a
blue check mark.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that means anymore because nothing else is blue on that site. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
again, so I think it's highlighting because lols and shame on these sites. But yes, the other side of it, which again I think is important to continue to talk about, is this idea of none of these Glorbo folks, I'm going to assume, are highly trained political operatives or disinformation experts working for large multinational corporations or other countries or having nefarious goals in mind. And I don't want to go all Kiefer Sutherland in rabbit hole, but my goodness, I am falling down the Glorbo rabbit hole.
No, they're spending their days working their shifts at 7-Eleven and then at home hanging out in their Discord talking about Glorbo. You know, that's all they're doing.
That is a future I'm okay with. But what I'm saying, Mario, is that this technology that leads to Glorbo, you know, as Jeff was pointing out, is not only being used for the lulz.
Yeah, and I think it points to how the internet culture, excuse me, the gaming culture continues to sort of be the canary in the coal mine, you know, as far back as Gamergate, you know, and beyond. It feels like we're the canary in the coal mine a little bit going like, hey, big problems are coming, and their name is Glorbo. So, you know, hopefully this wakes people up. And I hope these kinds of stories are, you know, a signal to folks that like, hey, this is shockingly simple to make what appears to your grandpa as a completely legitimate news story on a completely legitimate news site that has lots of other news was scraped from some moron's joke Reddit post. You know, I'm not a moron, but, you know, some knucklehead's post, and now grandpa's like, I gotta get the Glorbo. You know, it's not good. It's not good is what I'm saying. There's no silver lining on this one.
Unless the warning is heard. But yes, I do not think it is or will be. And I would just add to that, it's not even the grandpa. You know, I don't even want to, it's not even ageist. It's just if you happen not to know about the thing, I could very easily be fooled by this. I happen to know gaming, so I would not be fooled by this. But there's a very real place where I'm looking up information on how to fix a sticky bathroom door, you know, and it refers some silly thing that some carpenter Reddit posted for lulz, and I don't know it. You know what I mean? Like it's
And then your bathroom door never works again.
You just take it down. And everybody sees you poop. Yeah,
are we going to live in the world of open bathroom doors?
The only thing that separates us
living together.
No, that is it. The only thing that separates us from the animals is that we don't watch each other poop. You know, so
I mean, there are websites.
We don't.
Sorry.
What's your story, Jeff?
Talk about scraping the internet.
Talk about pets. Just
kidding. What we should talk about, because I think is one of the biggest news stories of the week, is that Final Fantasy 14 is coming to Xbox, and Phil Spencer was there to say, hey, we're going to make more Square Enix games come to Xbox. I think Xbox making moves, baby. Making moves. but that's not my story, Christian. I would never bring that up as my story because it's not.
I mean, I'm
my
glad
story.
You didn't even mention it because by mentioning it, people might be confused and think it was your story.
Right. And
like, I didn't want to talk about you know, a Monster Hunter game developed for iOS that is going to be a Pokemon Go successor, that while Niantic canceled a lot of other games, that they're now working on Monster Hunter now, and it's been given a September release date. Like, I wouldn't bring that up, because if I did, people would have assumed that was my story, which it wasn't.
Which it wasn't, and shall never be.
No, I mean, that you could pre-register right now would confuse people, because they'd think it was my story.
It feels more like an ad now. Actually, it feels more like you're doing an ad, is what you feel like.
I mean, it's now Monster Hunter now can't be my story of the week. It just can't be.
Anyway, my story of the week is one that was sent to us by numerous folks, including Ryan Hagen, Eric Ibsen. Thank you both. And others brought this to my attention. Lots of people tweeted at me because I have made
They did what? What'd they do to you?
They
posted at you?
I don't know. What is it?
They posted at you.
Threw bits my way through the pipes that are the internet. There were emails. I don't know. Anyway, I've made it very well known how much I absolutely loved Immortals Fenyx Rising. And it has only grown in my estimation since the year it came out. I think it was in my top five. I think it was maybe three or four in my top five that year. But man, it's a game I have thought about a lot. It's a game I continue to recommend to folks. I think that it is a underappreciated gem. I know everybody, you know, thinks it's just a cheap knockoff of Breath of the Wild. And in some ways, it is. But in other ways, it is, in my opinion, a much smoother, more fun experience than Breath of the Wild. And that's just my opinion. But also just a full of really lovely ideas and fun. It is just a fun game that crescendos at the end in ways that very few games do. I just adore Immortals Fenyx Rising, which is why I have been so excited about the Immortals Fenyx Rising sequel. Immortals something else probably that was going to be all about the Polynesian gods. I think that was what they were working on.
Yeah, that was the rumor that was discussed before. Hawaiian it was all and Polynesian culture.
Yeah, just seems so awesome. Like a subject that is underserved. I think there's not a lot of games about that. I love the sense of humor. I love that game so much. Well, it ain't happening. The sequel has been evidently canceled. There were rumors this week that it was canceled, and Ubisoft has now confirmed that Immortals Fenyx Rising sequel is canned, which is really some of the worst news I've heard in all of 2023. It is such a shame. The idea was that was going to become a new franchise for them, and no, evidently Ubisoft had decided they're only going to have like two franchises. Maybe three, if we're lucky. It's going to be all Assassin's Creed all the time, and maybe a Far Cry in there. Certainly no Splinter Cells.
And then whatever wacky new service launches, we'll get two exclusive games.
Yeah. You get your Tom Clancy's, but that's all we're doing.
It said that they couldn't slap Tom Clancy's Immortals Fenyx Rising sequel like as the title. Like,
there you
I
go.
Think they could have
done
some money,
and done. You know? Or how about Assassin's Creed Fenyx Rising? You know,
perfect.
I don't care. Evidently, there's been some reporting. Stephen Totello, a friend of the show, Stephen Totello, reported that what Ubisoft has done is pulled folks from the Immortals sequel and put them on Assassin's Creed Red, which is the upcoming Assassin's Creed that will be set in feudal Japan, which, you know, exciting. I think that's cool. It's what a lot of people have been wanting from Assassin's Creed for a long time. But I feel like, you know what? We've played those games. We have those games. What we don't have? A game about Polynesian gods. And that's awesome. And it's kind of like Breath of the Wild. That would be great. And it really bums me out that it's just going to be 15 Assassin's Creed games and some Clancy, and that's it. That's all we get, maybe a Far Cry. I just think it's a bummer that we're consolidating and we have fewer franchises. This felt like a really fun franchise, one I love, one that I think was a little engine that could, did not I know it did not blow the doors off sales wise, but I was hoping the sequel would be
well, they also released it like the same week as Valhalla. I'm exaggerating, but not by much. Like they didn't give the original the space it needed to thrive. Like, we're launching this new IP. Also, we have Assassin's Creed Valhalla coming out. And I think it was like just after a Far Cry. Like, I mean, it was a stacked time and they just kind of plopped it out there. And it also received a major rework from when they first showed it. Like, when it did have a little bit of time, it looked like a different game. And then when it came out, we praised the heck out of it on this show. And it is a bummer that they're not giving it that chance. My hope, and I could be wrong, but my hope is that, you know, you joked about putting Tom Clancy's Immortals Fenyx Rising. My hope is that Assassin's Creed does see some genre diversity, or at least gameplay diversity within this Assassin's Creed name, where we might see something that would otherwise fit a different tone, and they don't just all feel the same, but maybe I'm being overly optimistic.
I think there'll be some variation, but I think it'll be a pretty narrow spectrum. You know, we've seen the Assassin's Creed Odyssey versus the Assassin's Creed Mirage. Those seem like different tones, different gameplay styles, but of a theme. I don't think there's going to be anything that is as goofy as Immortals Fenyx Rising was, that was like intentionally funny and fun and kind of wacky. I don't think they're going to do that with any of those franchises.
It's very disappointing that they're not continuing with this, because this series was very much a good starting ground for just obviously another type of game that Ubisoft can play to, but for entry level people that want to get into open worlds, I thought this was also I thought the humor was smart enough for adults, but also good enough for even younger people to get into the series, as well as the gameplay mechanics, the way the game looked, very much your entry level, your gateway into these big worlds that you could start somebody with. And the fact that this will continue through, and you know, the fact that it was going to be based around the Hawaiian and Polynesian culture, like Moana, one of the biggest movies out there.
Yeah.
You could market off of, you know, in terms of like that audience that really loved that movie, to have that sort of a showcase, especially since there's probably a live action one happening sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, just, I think there's definitely a world to explore there that they, you know, that could benefit from having a game like this.
And I think more than just sort of, you know, my own personal love of this potential franchise that will not be.
So it's also shorter and smaller than most Assassin's Creed games.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of content in that game. It was great. It was so good. But also, I think it points to what is happening with the video game industry at large, or at least the AAA version of the video game industry, which is games are very expensive to make, and these big publishers are having to bet on sure things, and the only thing they interpret as being a sure thing is an established IP that they can double down on and expand in this way. And it feels like we're getting fewer and fewer games. They're big and expensive. And, you know, they're taking the people that were working on this and throwing them at Assassin's Creed Red. And that's, you know, hundreds of people added to an already thousands of people big team. That's just what it takes to make games of the size and scale of Assassin's Creed made, you know, mainline games. And it's just a bummer because it soaks up all of the effort and talent and money that. And hey, believe me, I love big, expensive AAA games. I do. I enjoy something that looks incredible, that has tons of stuff to do in it, that feels like it's pushing the envelope technologically. And that takes people and money to do. But also, man, it's just a bummer that these big publishers are having to trim off anything that is a little more interesting, has a little more identity, that's trying something a little different. It's just a bummer.
Meanwhile, Beyond Good and Evil 2 is still happening? Question mark.
That's a great question mark. that question mark is doing a lot of the heavy lifting. Yeah. You know what I even heard though, Christian, is that in the Immortals Fenyx Rising sequel, Glorbo was going to be in it.
Well, now it's in. Now let's run the stories. You know, let's get those.
You're here, folks.
No. I think Glorbo is going to be all the Assassin's Creeds now. They're just going to put Glorbo in.
Project Glorbo.
Project Glorbo. Assassin's Creed Glorbo. All right. Well, that's all the news that we could fit in, including some ones we just side fit in. But we got games to talk about.
I'm not going to talk about that there's a Game Informer article talking about why Sonic Mania 2 didn't happen, because you already moved on to play this. So I wouldn't bring that up.
I appreciate you not trying to do that, because
it's
that
an interesting article, but I would hate for people to know that it exists. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Christian's just doing ads this week. He's just doing ads for, I don't even
Lake
know.
Lake Tahoe, when you're hot and looking for a place to take a splash, come where the water's blue and not you. Come to Lake Tahoe.
The pillow forts are acoustically sound.
Where its audio is okay. It's not as good as your home studio, but it'll do for Lake Tahoe.
All right. On that note, let's talk about the games we've been playing in a segment we call The Playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on The Playlist. Mario, I see that you have been playing one of my favorite games of recent weeks. I just love this game. I hope more people try it. I wonder if you have been enjoying Dave the Diver.
Yeah, Dave the Diver. It's actually been kind of a sleeper hit for me, in terms of I knew nothing about it. I saw one video on a website, and I saw the trailer immediately and was like, that is the strangest thing I've seen in a while. I want to play that. What's this game about? And then I was pleasantly surprised. Actually, I've got to play this, funny enough, in the back of a car in a Steam Deck. So that's been fun.
You were playing Dave the Driver.
That's right. That's right.
I'll be here all week. I'll be here all week.
Take your waitresses. But yeah, Dave the Diver by, of course, Mint Rocket. It's, I mean, you've obviously talked about it before. You are a deep sea diver. You go fishing. You collect resources. You solve puzzles and also like different things. But at the same time, at night, you're also running a sushi shop and doing some other stuff. It is a strange mix of different genres of different gameplay mechanics, but it just has somewhat of a charm to it with all the characters and all the silliness. Yeah. One of the characters looks like Pierce Brosnan. I enjoy that.
Yeah, it's got so much charm. I think, you know, you hear on paper the mix, the mashup of genres, and that's kind of become very much an indie staple lately, is taking two disparate yes. game genres and putting them in the same game. And I'm here for it. I love that. I love the innovation that represents. And I've never seen, you know, a sort of Diner Dash meets, I don't know what, a 2D submarine exploration game. But above and beyond that, I think even though that right alone is a very cool concept to mash those two things up, what makes the game, I think, so special is the writing, the charm, the art style, just the world you're in is just so delightful.
Yeah, it definitely has so much charming, interesting development characters as you go along the game, from the different people that give you tasks throughout the sort of like exploration parts, all the way up to like your main people, like I said, like Pierce Brosnan or my sushi chef, who is just awesome when they do these special cutscenes and they just look really cool and sort of have that like Samurai Jackie kind of like animation style.
Yeah.
All the way up to the weapons manufacturer, which is just absolutely ridiculous. there's a lot of heart and a lot of stuff coming, especially when it's the interactions with the story that goes along. It's in chapters, so you sort of like more develop not only your relationships with these people, but also build out your restaurant, build out your equipment, and all that. It's just such a cute and interesting game that I'm hoping people will discover and will have a longevity future as just something that gets mentioned in passing whenever we talk about fun indie games.
Yeah.
And I hope that there are more stuff like this from this company in the future. I'm not aware of their other previous games, but now this immediately gets me like, okay, what else have you been working on? What's the next thing that you're going to do? Because you have such a unique take on these different types of disparate styles, which works perfectly for me, especially like when I was like on the go. This is my Steam Deck game that I was playing. Like, yeah. This is something that I could just load in. Like, okay, I'll do a session in the water, collect as many fish, or collect any, you know, desperate like things for my tasks, but then I'll spend like, all right, cool, I'm hiring people for my like business.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
giving them tasks. It's a lot of fun.
It's such a great game, and it goes places, man. The story mm-hmm. goes places. It does not rest on its laurels. Yeah. If folks have not given Dave the Diver a shot, put it on your playlist, because I think this is one of the standouts of the year, indie game wise, for sure.
Yeah. And I will say my only tip for people starting to play it, don't get frustrated, because when you first start it and you don't know the controls and you get hurt by sea creatures, you feel like you're powerless. Don't worry. You'll eventually upgrade these functions and it will be much better for you.
But I mean, there's no death in the game. You know,
forces
you to stop your. Yeah.
That's the thing that for me, who like the time management part of it freaks me out as someone who plays like Persona and other games.
Right.
When I originally like lost all my oxygen and I quote unquote died, then the next day or it skipped to the end of the day, I was like, oh no, all that resource time that I could be doing, you know, stuff
yeah,
like
yeah.
that. But yeah.
It's pretty forgiving, I find. It's, you know, it's not.
Early in the beginning, it feels like it's not, but then once you've sort of like did all the tutorial stuff, then it's like, okay, you have multiple times in the day, like all types of stuff like
that. Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
Dave the Diver, what else is on your playlist?
I have been doing the fantasy of the final, Final Fantasy 16, which of course that's a lot of fun. Actually, not aware of what your thoughts are on it, but I'm having a blast in terms of my Devil May Cry brain going nuts and doing different combos and stuff like that. The RPG elements and stuff like that, I very much feel like very disparate from this title. But the actual just sort of like lizard brain of like smashing different buttons and taking out combos, it's been a lot of fun. As someone who's not like the biggest Final Fantasy person, my first Final Fantasy game that I've ever played actually was Final Fantasy Tactics Advance on the Game Boy Advance.
Very good game.
Really great game. And then I tried 15, finished 15, finished 7, the remake, and now I'm trying to go back and revisit all these Final Fantasy games. So this being more of a less traditional Final Fantasy and more into the Devil May Cry with the action part of it, Kingdom Hearts-esque stuff, it's definitely been tickling all those needs of being able to just punch things.
Yeah.
So that's been my takeaway with it. It's definitely been very Game of Thrones light in almost two similar of a ways. Those are the detractors that I come from it. Like, I feel like I'm not as high on it as I feel like a lot of more people are. But I'm having fun for the little things that I am doing. But it's
how are
definitely
you on the sort of side quest of it all. Are you tempted to do lots of the side quests? Are you kind of mainlining the story? What's your take there?
So I've been hearing the discourse on the side quests, and a lot of people are saying that there are things that are definitely worth trying out. However, I feel like they're too in far in between, because I am cleaning out areas because I attempt to not jump to the next story beat, because this game is fairly linear. But once you get the different green orbs that's like, hey, go try this and this, I try to do all of them. And a lot of the time I feel like I'm just given with go fetch the thing for the thing. Right.
Yeah.
But then there are some little aspects that I do find interesting. Like, there is one specific one not too spoilery, but it ended up being like a deeper conversation about people in that world. And I thought that was fascinating, but I don't think it's well defined for the rest of the game. And to me, it's interesting. As much as I enjoy the linearness and sort of the straight path of this game, and not so much how RPGs like, say, like a Fallout or even like Witcher 3 specifically. Witcher 3, to me, has some of the best sort of side questy sort of adventures in terms of how they can develop and change depending on what you do. This is very much like you're going to linearly pass through them on these ones. They're just not as enticing or as interesting. And that's where my problem with them goes specifically. They don't add a lot of meat to the actual bone of this game. Ultimately, I feel like a lot of the excess stuff like that, I'm forgiving it for the combat. I'm forgiving for the mashup of the different abilities, the different ways that I can, recycle abilities and try something else if I wanted to see what else is around, you know. I'm forgiving a lot of things because I'm having fun in that aspect. Then I would say I probably wouldn't necessarily give it an if it was a different game.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. I think what it does very, very well as far as the combat. Christian, I think that's an interesting side topic. I'm curious what you... I think Witcher 3 is a great pull. And I'm curious what your... If I said, what is the game that you think has the best side quests? Because I don't think you are traditionally like a big side quest guy just in general. Because, you know, of your issue about, you know, being pulled away from the urgency of the main story, just, you know, just generally speaking. But what would you cite as, if I said, what is the game that has the best side quests? What is the game that you would come to mind first for you?
That is a great question. I have two that immediately jump to mind, and one is a little cheap because I have not finished it. But one is Celeste, one of my all-time favorite games, and its side content is the strawberries or the other collectibles. And none of those are required to roll credits in the game or progress screens, but they are there and they are tantalizing. And even getting them doesn't really change much. Yes, you get a slightly different ending cutscene if you got all the strawberries. You do. Spoiler, you do. Does it meaningfully change, you know, the experience of get the quote-unquote good ending or something like that? No, it doesn't. They are strictly there just to get. You know, it is low-hanging fruit. That's often very difficult to reach, even though it is low-hanging. So that is one, and I know that that's not the typical answer, but that immediately jumped to mind. And the other one that I think is a little cheap because I have not finished it, and it's Tears of the Kingdom. And I think you could bring that back to Breath of the Wild because I would consider shrines to be side content. They're not required to finish the story and certainly to do all of them. And I think they're some of the best content in the game. I love the shrines, and I enjoy Tears of the Kingdom shrines more than Breath of the Wild, even though Breath of the Wild had some exquisite shrines. Some of the Tears of the Kingdoms, you know, you build a little contraption to get up to the thing, to do a thing. They have a little feeling of a portal-esque style puzzle that you need to figure it out, and you know they're self-contained, so everything that's there exists, that everything you need, whereas some environmental puzzles in Tears of the Kingdom, I always think, oh, I don't have the thing to do the thing. My stamina is not high enough to reach the thing that I need to get. And the shrines aren't that way. I think that game has some of the best side content of any game ever made. And I think another big reason for that is that arguably most of the game could be considered side content. And it's so well done.
That's interesting. I mean, you certainly approach it, it's very revealing to me about how you think about side quests as side content, you know, because I think, I mean, maybe Tears of the Kingdom, I think probably has more traditional quests in that sense, side quests. But I think it's interesting that you would even pick Celeste as, you know, in that category. I have lauded the Horizon franchise as being some of the best written side quests I've ever encountered. Obviously, all the Bethesda games, the Fallouts, the Elder Scrolls, but that's another example of, like, you know, I would say 70-80% of the game is side content. You know, it's... Well,
I think it's interesting. Does it need to be an RPG for you to consider it side content, or sorry, side quest? Because I think another example is other Nintendo games, like the Mario games. Oftentimes you finish it, air quote, and then it's like, here's the real game, you know, to some extent.
Yeah.
Get all the red coins. Does that qualify? Or in your head, are you at, oh, I have, it kind of is an RPG, and then it needs other non-main quest
to
items.
To me, it's the value add of the side quest of, like, what are they providing me? So for instance, you know, not in the traditional sense where, like, Witcher or something like that, where it's story-based content, but let's just say world building, right? So I actually love getting the collectibles in The Last of Us, specifically Last of Us 2, because a lot of that always leads to little lore and story bits about different things that you could find in the world that are not contingent to the main story. Sort of like getting to know a piece of the world just because I found something. And that's adding to the collectible list. That's me clearing, you know, the percentage off of the game. I'm not a trophy hunter like crazy people like Greg Miller. I very much enjoy just in having that locked off so that way I learn something more about the world. I think that is interesting in the way that you approach Celeste with the strawberries. They're collectibles, but they do give something to you if you do collect them, and it's a nice little piece that you get.
I'm conflicted. I mean, I think it's hard for me to – I definitely in even – occurring to me to ask you the question or you know, having Mario inspire the question with which of the three, to me, the idea is like, what is the best motivation to do a thing based on the story being told? And I think, you know, I'm certainly motivated in any 2D Mario game to like go up there and get those extra coins. Why? No, because they're there. Like there's no, you know, did I need to get the puzzle piece on that level? Did I need to unlock the sticker? No, but I'm going to try, not because I think it's side content, but because I think that's the game. The game is, oh, this is a plus one challenge. Like you can get from left to right and get to the end of the level, but the actual challenge is to get the strawberries and Celeste or whatever it is. You know, I don't conceptualize it in the same way as I'm walking through a town and there's a guy who's like, hey, I know you're searching for your lost son, but can you help me with these boars that have infested my farm? I feel like,
hey, I know the princess is another castle, but yeah, I'm a blue coin.
I get your point. Well, that's why I said I'm conflicted. I think you're making valid. I mean, you're stretching, in my opinion, but it's a valid stretch, right? It's pushing it into an area I wasn't really.
It's Jean-Claude Van Damme doing the splits on a countertop. Like, it's a valid stretch.
Yeah.
You know, you could have just punched a guy, but do the splits, then punch. Valid.
Yeah. I think you do break a great point. The fact that, yeah, it's not necessarily the linear path that's giving you satisfaction, but it's also the side stuff that comes around it. And that happens in Mario games. I could just beat the level, but what if I beat the level with the coins? You know, like, yeah. I do get that.
I'm curious what listeners think as far as, like, what do you consider... Do you consider, you know, the red coins in Mario a side quest, you know, or do you consider the strawberries in Celeste a side quest?
I think continuing that, are shrines in modern Zelda games a side quest, or is that something different? Is that a collectible in a way that I know you're getting a thing that does upgrade your character in a way, but again, most of them aren't necessary. So where does that slot in? Because those shrines also aren't saying, help me, you know, secure my farm from these bandits. Because there are those moments in Zelda that are that, you know, help me reopen this newspaper.
Yeah, and they serve the same purpose in a lot of ways as side quests in an RPG, because you do the side quest to get XP to level up your character. You do the shrines to be able to get more hearts or stamina. You know, you're doing the same. You're like leveling up your character by doing ancillary content that isn't necessarily required. Like a speed runner ain't doing shrines in Breath of the Wild, you know? So it's an interesting concept, because I would never think of shrines. I feel like shrines are more central to the experience, but you know, helping a farmer is also central to the experience of The Witcher or whatever. So I don't know, you know, it's an interesting, as usual, you've decided to upend my question instead of answering it directly.
Anyway. Also, flowers to God of War Ragnarok, specifically the side quest there, I feel like added. And there's just content that you will miss if you just don't do it.
That's a great pull, too. I think that game has excellent side quest content.
Yeah.
All right. That was a little detour, but I know you have something else on your playlist I'm very interested to hear about.
Yeah, so this one I didn't get a chance to do a lot with my time, because Dave the Diver actually took up a lot of my time while I was traveling. But Oxenfree 2 came out last week. That, of course, is the Midnight School release, Netflix release. This is a sequel to, of course, the first Oxenfree, which was a indie title, very much story-based. It is these characters going onto an island, and wacky, cool Twin Peaksy stuff happens, and Goonies, and it's just sort of this this fun story that you get told along the way. There's some minor puzzle stuff that happens, but ultimately you are just getting to know these characters and their relationships with each other, while very much in this beautiful, I don't even know how to describe it. It's very picturesque, like diorama, like flat angled world that has layers when you travel up it. It has a very unique art style that I really enjoy, aesthetic that I really enjoy. The music is fantastic. If you like Celeste or in that vein, I think you would really enjoy Oxenfree, specifically Oxenfree 2, I think also does a great job. But this is a sequel in which I think you could actually play it without having played the first one, which, why haven't you played the first one? It's 99 cents nearly everywhere that you can find it. I actually ended up buying it again because it's on sale for 99 cents. So I have both Oxenfree and Oxenfree 2 on my Steam Deck. But you can definitely jump into Oxenfree 2, especially at the beginning. There might be some ties to the previous game, but I think you could play Oxenfree 2 without having to worry about it. But essentially, you are just a person that is returning back to the town that is in Oxenfree. You're on a new island that has some relation and some weird stuff going on. That's as much as I would love to talk about, because this is very much a story heavy sort of like exploration game is the best way I can probably describe it. But you've had some history with it. What are your thoughts, Oxenfree 2, or your interest in it?
I haven't played the sequel yet. Christian, I think you did. You play it?
I also have not made time for the sequel yet. It is
we both love the first
for
one,
you
I
to
think.
Pull up a bumper about how many games there are that are continuing. Are there
perhaps
That's it. That's the one. That's the one I was looking for.
But we both really enjoyed the first Oxenfree, right? I'm speaking for you, but I think you agree that it's an excellent game.
Yes, phenomenal.
Yeah. Surprising that we both haven't jumped on the sequel. I think it's, I don't know, something about it being a Netflix release. I don't know. It kind of like put it off my radar a bit. I don't know why that would be, but.
Oddly enough, actually, it's funny. I bought it on Steam. It is available on Netflix. If you have a Netflix subscription, I believe you're able to play this on your phone or on the I'm not sure how the television stuff works, if it works. They also did Immortality, which was also something I loved. Very much, if you have Netflix, go for it, I guess. But this is available on Steam. It's available, I believe, on Xbox and PlayStation. Definitely, my opinion. Check it out. It's a lot of fun so far. I'm excited to dedicate my time once I beat Final Fantasy 16 first.
Yeah, I gotta make time for that game, but it's like staring in the barrel of Baldur's Gate. That's gonna end my life. Anyway, that is what is on Mario's playlist. Christian, you and I have a very similar playlist. Let's start talking about Disney Illusion Island, which we've both been playing on Switch. The new 2D Metroidvania. With a very interesting throwback Disney art style, kind of looks like a Steamboat Willie style.
It's their current Mickey animations, which has been
10
years now. Yeah, like those new Mickey shorts. The opening cinematic is that.
My daughter watches a ton of Mickey content that's all new, and it's not that. So I think there's a variety of Mickey things happening.
That is
true.
That is true. But yes, they've very much done a lot of these. This style of Mickey animation,
the new ride,
definitely pulling from
the brand new ride at Disneyland, is also in this style, which is kind of cool. Yeah,
I have not done that ride. I'm curious your thoughts on it. I think Disney Illusion Island needs to be praised for many reasons. One of which I do think is that art style and the animation and the way it uses that art style throughout the game, and I think some really cool and fantastic ways. And I guess if I were going to do my micro review of this game, you know, the box quote, it is a fantastic entry level Celestivania.
It really is my first Metroidvania. It really is. It does feel like it's my first Metroidvania. Yeah. And I think it does a great job of introducing those concepts to an age group that hasn't grown up with them. I'll let you continue. I've had an interesting experience because I've been playing this alongside my son. So
I want to know the pipeline to Cuphead. Just curious.
Pipeline to Cuphead. Yeah, I think it is. And I agree with you, Jeff. I mean, it introduces and reinforces these ideas. It starts, in my opinion, incredibly slow. But it's telling you, like, now you can jump twice. And then you'll get to a point where a pop-up will come up again, and it'll be like, hey, don't forget, you can jump twice.
You're going to need to jump twice here.
Right, yes. And then you'll come back to it a little bit later. You'll use it a few times here and there, and then you'll come back to a point, and it will remind you again. It will, you know, don't forget, you got to jump twice to clear this, and then you get a wall jump, and then you get this other stuff. And it constantly is reinforcing these. There will be parts and levels you can't get to yet. Remember to try later after you. And it does this stuff that I think is really smart. Again, not everyone has been playing games for forever and had these new mechanics layered on successive releases time and time and time and time and time and time again.
But also when I was seven, Metroid never said that to me. Metroid was never like, hey, bro.
Straight up, man.
You're going to need to come back.
No, it did. Maybe. Metroid 1 maybe didn't. Super Metroid, it was like, you can't get there. And then you get the bomb, and it's like, now you can use this to do this. And then you do the thing. Like those early Nintendo games, everybody talks about Mario 1-1. But all of those early Nintendo games were incredible at teaching you how to do the thing you just did.
I just remember many a sleepover party where me and all my little 7-year-old friends were just completely flummoxed. There was no internet to go to. We couldn't look it up. We just left the TV on all night on Metroid going like, I don't know where to go next. I don't know what to do.
And you didn't want to call the Nintendo hotline because it charges up all the minutes and all that. Like, you don't
want
to do that.
Give me the controller. You're not hitting jump at the right time. I can make that jump. Give me the controller. I can make that jump.
Yeah. Not realizing that you just aren't ever supposed to make that jump. Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm pretty sure I've never finished a Sega Genesis game because of all this.
In my day, we didn't have tool tips.
Well, then this game might be for you because Disney Illusion Island doesn't have a mini map. And, you know, back in your day, you have to pull up the whole map to look at the map. There's no mini map on screen. So while I think Disney Illusion Island does a lot of really cool things for introducing people to Metroidvania, yes, but also I think Celeste-style precision platforming, but being very forgiving in its the precision that it requires, I think – I would call Disney Illusion Island a good game. It is not great. It is not excellent. And I think if you have played a lot of these style of games, there are certainly better games that you could go play instead of Disney Illusion Island. Even if you are a hardcore Disney fan, I think you can go back and play some of those 16-bit era games you perhaps missed that I think do this style of gameplay perhaps better. I think like the music's a little underwhelming. The voice acting and the cutscenes is phenomenal, but it isn't throughout the game. There's a lot of just like reading things. I think the writing is sharp. I think it's funny. I mean, they're constantly crapping on Donald Duck, who I will mention several times as I discuss just to make Jeff do his Donald Duck voice. I want him to do his entire. Your whole review
good.
Needs to be a Donald good. Voice, please, Jeff. But there's enough stuff that kind of holds the game back for me to be like, this is a recommend if you have a Switch. You know, like Bluey is I recommend across the spectrum as a TV show. Great for kids. If you don't have kids, go watch Bluey. Disney Illusion Island is not that. Disney Illusion Island, in my opinion, is if you have kids, this is fun to play with them. Otherwise, there are better games that you could go play. But I'm curious if your opinion is different, Donald.
Well,
I'm sorry. I am shocked because I thought I was going to be the negative Nancy on this game. I thought you were going to come in heralding its praises, and I was going to come in and squash them. But I basically agree with everything you said. I have been playing this alongside my 6-year-old, about to be 7-year-old son. And he is loving it. And I kept telling him, like, I want to know what you like about it because I want to talk about it on my podcast. And so tell me what you think. And I was like, do you like the fact that you can't go certain places and you have to come back? He's like, yeah, it's so exciting. I never, you know, I get to see where I'm going to be able to go. And we go to a place and I see a big glowing light coming out of the ground. And I know we don't have the ability to do anything there, but I'm going to get, you know, a new item. And he loves the fact that the items that you get are unique to each character. You know, they all do the same thing, but each of the four main characters, you know, Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Goofy have a different way of accomplishing the thing, you know? So like the double jump for Minnie is a paper airplane. And for Donald, it's a rocket that might explode at any time. So and each of the characters has they all accomplish the same thing, but it's unique to the characters. He loves that. He loves lots of the the game of it because he's never really played a Metroidvania before. For me, I don't have the heart to tell him, but I am really underwhelmed by this game, which I have been very much excited about because it is very much, you know, it is directed at a very specific age group, which is fine. But I think Mario, for example, does a great job of being directed at an age group, but like also kind of scales up to adults, and you can get so much out of a Mario game no matter what age you access it. And I think there are lots of games that deal with nostalgic IP that adults flock to, and you go, oh my gosh, I'm so excited about this Disney game. We don't get a lot of really, you know, top tier AAA Disney themed games. I'm excited to play Disney's Illusion Island as an adult. I just don't think there's a lot there. It's pretty bland. And I'm shocked to say that I agree with you 100% that the cutscenes, such as they are great. Like, great. They're genuinely funny. They are very sharp and well-written. But there's very few of them. And mostly what you're doing is playing in a universe that has very little to do with Disney at all. You know, it is taking the approach of, you know, a Mario plus Rabbids, where we've got the Mario stable, but they're in a world that is mostly not their own, right? So you've got Mickey and Minnie and all those folks, and they're awesome and they're well animated and they look great, but they're interacting with a bunch of characters that you've never seen before that are invented for the game in a world that is invented for the game. And it's got that sort of watercolor painterly style that we've seen in old Disney cartoons. So that's cool. But most of the environments are really plain. There's not a lot of life to them. I mean, certainly comparing it to something like Ori, you know, the Ori series, which is just vibrant and alive and magical and full of
wonder. Donkey Kong Country, that, you know, Tropical Freeze.
Yes.
And some of those games that aren't new, you know.
Right. This game is so bland in that regard. And there's just not much Disney to it at all. Like, you're not encountering other Disney things. You're not in a Disney world. I don't even mean a grander Disney. I'm not talking like Kingdom Hearts style where it's got every Disney character under the sun slammed into it. I mean, even there's, you know, you could have made characters that are specifically from the Mickey Mouse world, the Mickey Mouse cartoons, and had, you know, Pete be the bad guy or whatever. You could people it with all these characters that my daughter has been watching endlessly. And so I'm very exposed to these days. But it doesn't, right? It doesn't have any of that charm. It's so disappointing in that regard. And then, you know, it also doesn't seem to want to invent any new mechanical interesting stuff. Like, it's all stuff I've seen before in other Metroidvanias. And that's fine. Like, it does, again, through the eyes of my almost 7-year-old who hasn't played a lot of these types of games, it's great. Like, it's introducing him to that. He understands, like, at first when we're playing it, he's like, no, Daddy, we can get there. We can get there. Cause he's used to a Mario game where it's just like, you can get there. You just have to figure out how. But with this game, you literally can't get there because you haven't encountered the person that gave you the thing that lets you get there yet. And the game teaches him that. And he's like, oh. And that sparked his imagination of like, oh my gosh, what crazy new thing am I going to get next? But that's not novel for me. And so, you know, you're absolutely right in the Bluey comparison, which is, you know, Bluey is the perfect example of the thing that kids get a lot out of, parents get a lot out of, nearly perfect in every way. This is not that. This is not Mario. This is not, you know, the game that will appeal to every age group. It really does feel like a kid's game. It does feel like my first Metroidvania. And that's fine. Like, I'm enjoying sitting next to him. I like that it has 4-player co-op. It does a lot of the co-op things very smartly. In fact, one of the things that I'm most impressed with this game, I've never seen this particular feature, which is innovative and cool, in that you can get to a ledge that might be hard to get to. And then as a co-op partner, you can literally drop a rope down to the lower ledge and let your co-op partner climb up it. So you can literally have one player get to where they need to go and have the other players circumvent the crazy platforming. because one player got there. And they can literally, at any time, you can drop a rope. Another cool thing they do is the difficulty level is based on how many hearts, how much life you have. And so you set your difficulty level. You can have one heart, two hearts, or three hearts, or you can have a heart that is unbreakable, so you can literally never die. Smart. A smart way to set difficulty. But also, when you're playing co-op, at any time, you can hug another player, and that will give you a bonus heart. So my son, anytime he gets hurt and he hits a bad guy, he's like, "Daddy, Daddy, can we hug?" We both have to go and push Y at the same time, and we hug, and we each get a bonus heart. So effectively, if you only get hurt once at any given time, you'll never get low on health. And I think that's a really smart, active way of making the game accessible for younger players and it also is really delightful that he's like, "Daddy, let's hug, let's hug." And we've gotten to this point now where we play together and we don't even have to say it. Like, he gets hurt and we just both press Y and hug each other. It's delightful. So there is a lot of good stuff about it. If you're a parent and want to play this with a young kid, it's great. It just feels disappointing to me because of the missed opportunity that they could have done more. You know, they could have been more interesting, deeper. Yes.
Yeah, and I think you've also exposed why it is built around a co-op experience in many ways, and I think in terms of the broadness of the level design. And playing solo, it feels even more empty. I played a lot of it solo on the plane as we were traveling from New York back to California. And I played some with my daughter on the plane. We each had our Joy-Cons and playing it that way. And yeah, co-op, it doesn't feel as empty. But solo, the worlds feel very empty. They feel still. But the flourishes that are there, it's like, I agree with everything you said, but I think there are still probably better games to do that, because I think you will have fun, because it's kind of like playing any game is fun in co-op. Redfall isn't that good of a game, but it's fun in co-op. You know, yeah. It's like, well, yeah, hanging out with your friends is fun, and sharing a gaming moment with your child is fun.
Right.
But there's not enough there, I think, to make it even the recommend of the game to do that with them among the sea of other games. And I think that...
Yeah, it's just that the Disney characters can be a gateway. Yeah.
Yes. And the checkpoints are mailboxes. And those are so beautifully animated and so cool and so fun and do have that, you know, quote-unquote Disney magic and that flourish. And I wish it went further, and I wish it went into more of the game, and I wish the game somehow balanced being rewarding as a single-player game and as a co-op game. And so I feel bad judging it by what it's not, but it is a good game and one that I could recommend people pass.
All right. We both also had a chance to check out Ratchet & Clank on PC, the new Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart. Kind of couldn't think of the subtitle. Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart has been released on PC. We're both playing it on beefy GPs. and oh, my goodness. With the DLSS 3.0 frame generation, I don't know. Maybe you've been playing it on Steam Deck, but I've been playing it on my beefy GP. What is your take?
So, yeah, I've been playing it on both, more on my Steam Deck than on my beefy GP, just because of the traveling. And I should say, who's provided a code for this game from Sony.
Yes.
And I am reminded at how incredible this game is. It is now a 2-year-old PlayStation 5 prior exclusive. It was not a cross-gen game like so many had been at the beginning of the PlayStation 5. And Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart is a phenomenal game. It is Insomniac firing on all cylinders. It is just a fun-ass video game. And I know I've said that about a bunch of video games this year, but it just is. It is a video game. And it doesn't care that it's a video game. And you get awesome weapons, and you're grinding on rails, and you're jumping from rift to rift and doing all this really fun stuff, and it's beautiful, and the worlds are vibrant and full of so many things to look at that don't distract you from what you're supposed to be doing but are still incredible to see, and just a truly phenomenal video game. And I do not mean that in a bad way, but it is a video game. And it's a good PC port. It's a Nixis port, and at launch, I think is heads and shoulders better than The Last of Us Part 1 on PC was. Mm. I don't think it's as good as Spider-Man or Miles Morales, both of which I put a bunch of time back into on PC when they were released as well. And that was also Insomniac game next to doing the port. And this game, I think, is a little rougher around the edges. And what I think is interesting about this game and the landscape of PC gaming now, Jeff, and I'm curious your opinion on this, or I guess maybe how good Sony first-party developers are, you know, coding for the metal, so to speak, like designing games specifically for those systems, is I feel like Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, I recommend as a video game because it's a great video game. So if you haven't played it, I think it's worth playing. But I think even if you have a beefy GP, if you have a PlayStation 5, I think I'd recommend playing it on PlayStation 5 solely because it's really good on PlayStation 5. And I don't need to ask you the 10 follow-up questions, even if you have a beefy GP, of like, what's your SSD speed? Is it an AMD beefy GP? Because AMD beefy GPs don't currently have ray tracing right now. If it's NVIDIA beefy GP, then you are going to get ray tracing. But DLSS 3.0, while generally is good, it seems to be, at least in my hour and a half I spent on it, and I don't quite know if it's DLSS 3.0 related or not, but like textures don't seem to, it's not pop in, it just kind of feels like they're not there ever, like as high res as everything else. And because everything else is so high res and so smooth, I'm like, I think that looks fuzzier than it used to look. And so I feel like this game is so well optimized for what the PlayStation 5 can do that I think for PC it requires you to have all these other components that really make looking at that PC spec sheet necessary, whereas usually I feel like it isn't, where it's like, oh, the PC version is better because PCs are more powerful than consoles. And I don't know I don't know if I'd recommend it on PC over PlayStation 5, but I think, Jeff, maybe you disagree.
I think I do disagree. But you know, I'm biased because I've only played it on a really, you know, top tier rig. So you know, take it with a grain of salt. I have not tested this game on, you know, mid tier PC hardware.
And Steam Deck, I should say, it blows my mind that a PlayStation 5 only game I play on Steam Deck at 30 frames per second.
That's like, what I was going to say.
That blows my mind.
It belies it points to this the falsehood of like, well, this Rift thing is only possible with the power of the PlayStation 5 or this like handheld PC thing that Steam came out or that Valve came out with.
But with an SSD, that's the thing. And I will say there are. It's in like the first hour of the game when it really shows off those rifts. There are moments in it on Steam Deck where Ratchet just floats in space.
Oh,
like
really?
He's still moving, but okay. It's like, and then I go through the next one. And on my beefy GP, that was not the case. And on PlayStation 5, that certainly is not the case.
On it is the not little the rifts, case on PS5. Oh my
right.
God.
And the little rifts that you kind of just pull yourself through in combat, on Steam Deck, those are flawless, and I should say this is Steam Deck verified, and it runs really well, but it is a different experience in PlayStation 5. I truly do not think that this game could run the way it should run with an HDD over a fast SSD, which the Steam Deck has.
And I also, you know, my home computer, my desktop PC, which is the only thing I play this on, has only SSDs in it, has a very beefy GP. So I have a complete bias, and I, you know, I will completely admit that. However, if you've got, you know, that kind of hardware, this puts the PS5 version to shame, I think. The DLSS 3.0 of it all, you know, I was constantly in my playthrough of Rift Apart on PS5, switching back and forth between the two settings. Do I want performance? Do I want ray tracing? Do I want a high frame rate? Do I want ray tracing? Do I want the kind of hybrid version?
This was the game where I was constantly doing that, and I would prefer it either way at any point, to be honest with you. Give me the 30 frames at 4K.
The 40-frame version they patched in. That was the way to do it. The performance ray trace.
When they did that, I was like, yeah,
that's what
back.
I played as well mostly. But I like the high frame rate. With DLSS 3.0 on this, you don't have to choose. If you've got the hardware to run it, if you've got a really beefy GP, if you've got the ability to do DLSS 3, my goodness. And I got it in, you know, it's 32.9. It supports 32.9 native. It supports that super ultra wide monitor that I have. It is silky smooth. It is absolutely pristine. The ray tracing is happening with an insanely high frame rate. It is just butter. And so, like I said, I'm an edge case. I know I have the privilege of being able to say I have a really nice computer with a really nice monitor. But in that case, this is the way to play this game.
Well, I think I agree then, but just check your stats, right? Again, yeah. I think people, and for so many other games, and maybe Returnal is also another example of this. And again, a first-party Sony studio that is crushing making games internally for that dedicated hardware. But I think typically there are so many other games that your computer, not yours, Jeff, but a listener's computer could crush that might struggle with moments of rift apart because it is relying on needing a fast SSD and it is relying on a currently NVIDIA beefy GP to do the ray tracing and to have the frame generation. And so I think if you look at that, a lot of times I feel like you can look at that min spec and go, yeah, right. You know, like, I can make this work. And I think we're entering an era of PC gaming now where because consoles have this set spec that is giving people these components that can run these things fast and load off the memory really quick and pull from an SSD, I think we're starting to see a little bit of divide in maybe I'm just old and everybody's new computer has a fast SSD now and it's not as big of an issue as I think. But it just seemed interesting to me that there's some quote unquote good computers that I think might struggle with this game. Whereas on PlayStation 5, you're getting a baller experience still. I do not think this game is less than on PS5, but I agree with you that it is an exquisite PC port. I would just check to make sure you have the things it can be.
That being said, Sony, if you'd like to reach out and let me get a code for PC so I can try it on my lean beef of a 1080 Ti, I'd love to try it. Love to try it.
It's a great game. It's just a great
catch on fire.
Did they add a new gun to the PC version? I don't remember the Pixelator.
Yeah, that was a DLC.
Oh, it's DLC.
Yeah, the Pixelator was there. It was, I forget if it was a pre-order.
You start with it.
Beginning bonus. Yeah.
You start with it in the PC version.
I am not,
so
again,
cool.
I was provided a code by Sony. Fun. I am not sure if everybody who purchases the game starts with it, but yes, our experience, we started with it, but it was available in the PS5 game as well.
Oh, I never got it in the PS5 game, but it is, it is a delight. You turn
you
people into
PS5,
like 8-bit pixels and then you can smash the pixels. It's so cool.
Yes. It's very cute.
If you don't have a PS5, it's super easy to recommend this game. It 2 years old. You wouldn't know it. It's incredible, and Insomniac remains one of the best developers making games, in my opinion. Just, it's such a good video game.
The one thing I do want to bring up, and maybe just with this context of obviously being a PC game and playing it at a PC location, are you playing it at a desk, or are you playing it like on the couch with like with a bigger monitor, or how is your play with it?
I'm playing it at a desk with a bigger monitor. I have the 32.9, like the super ultra wide Samsung Odyssey monitor.
I think with like games, it depends on the game, but I think like even though like this has the full PC port and absolutely crushes, it's the feel of playing the console on the television and sitting back on the couch and just having it be a showcase with like the giant living room TV. That's to me where this game flourishes. But hey, that's just for whatever structure.
No, I don't disagree with that. I think it's a showpiece for the PS5 still, and I think it's a showpiece for my PC now. I think it's just so silky, buttery, smooth, and beautiful. And in the 32.9 aspect ratio, like you just fall into the game. It's just sick. Mm. Good stuff. I have one more item beyond those two on my playlist. And I guess it's Jeff's Indie Game of the Week, which I guess could really be more specifically called Jeff's Indie Roguelike of the Week, because it's what I love. And I've been playing a lot of them. And people have started recommending them, and please bring it. Keep it coming. The recommendations.
Jeff spends the first half of the playlist complaining there are too many games and then talks about a new roguelike that's destroying his life at the end of the section of the playlist. It's Jeff.
Yeah, good. That's catchy. Just, you can
thank
hum
you.
Along
I mean,
with
I think
it,
it's
huh?
look, Taylor Swift causes little literal earthquakes at her concerts, but yeah. Does she have bangers like Jeff talks about, games, something, roguelike,
something. Yeah. Anyway, this one actually comes recommended to me from a friend of the show, Dan Trachtenberg, who said I should check out Doomsday Hunters, which has been, I guess, in development for 9 years, finally came into out of early access into 1.0 release just last week, I believe. It is available on Switch. I am playing it on Steam on my PC. It is a it's a hard game to wrap your head around. Ostensibly, it does what a lot of roguelites do. It's got the Hades DNA, you know, at all. A lot of roguelites do this. Go into a room, kill all the enemies in the room, move to the next room, upgrades, continue to a boss, upgrades, die, pay, you know, take the currency that you earned, buy things for the future runs. It does that thing. But this game, woo, it's got a lot going on, folks. Doomsday Hunters, first of all, I should talk about the art style, which I think is unique and interesting. It very much feels like it wants to evoke the 80s, those classic, 80s schlocky action movies. You know, the main character in this looks like Rambo a bit, looks like Ikari Warriors video game from the 80s, looks like, you know, looks like Snake Plissken a bit. The game defaults to a CRT overlay. You know, it's got the scan lines. You can turn it off, but it defaults to having that on PC. So, you know, it really wants to evoke kind of an old school video game look. It's got a pixelated art style, but it is in isometric perspective. But it is just, it is so much going on. You are going into these rooms, which are not rooms in this game. They are islands separated by toxic post-apocalyptic water that you can't touch or you die. But the islands themselves, it's kind of got this toxic Avenger, post-apocalyptic escape from New York, escape from LA aesthetic to it, where everything's kind of a mutant, everything's kind of a gross, yucky looking something that crawled out of the slime and ooze in the post-apocalypse. And you're running around blasting it all with your various guns that you can find. Plus you've got magic, plus you've got single use items, plus you've got augments and gut weapon mods. There's so much. And I think I left out three or four different things. You've got a weapon that charges up over time that is a super weapon that you can use. But also, there are certain crates that only can be opened if you blast them with your super weapon. But then you use up that charge that you took a long time for you to get. There's so many different kinds of upgrades. And the screen itself is chaos. Chaos! A lot of these games, you know, the rooms are not super messy. They're kind of clean, and you can focus on what's going on. This game, tons of stuff going on. Most of the enemies, I would say a large percentage of the enemies that you defeat, when you kill them, they turn into a second form of some kind. There's things that pop off of them and then chase you around the island, which are actually bonuses. They're actually good things, but they look like they're chasing you, and you're dodging bullets and slime and ooze and creatures flinging themselves at you. So sometimes it's like there's so much going on. It's like, oh, I didn't know that I actually do want to touch that because it's a resource that fell off the bad guy and is chasing me around, trying to soak up into me, you know, so I can collect it. It is intense, man. This game is crazy. And then you go from these islands, you touch these pads and they'll like zip you to the next island, and you've defeat all the enemies and like, enemy clear or island clear, and you get all the cool stuff. But the islands also have like jump pads that'll fling you into the air. You've got a jump that you can augment with all kinds of crazy augments. Your jump can unleash weapons, like unleash attacks. Your jump can be a vertical jump, a horizontal jump. It can be a double jump. You can change it in all these kinds of crazy ways. this game is like just overwhelming with the amount of stuff it's got, the amount of ways to customize your playthrough, you know, because you're doing these runs. The boss battles are crazy and frenetic. I mean, I'm having a lot of fun with it, but, you know, last week I talked about Ember Knights.
Is all of that additive stuff good?
I think it
has all the stuff and it's a lot of fun, or is it has a lot of stuff and it makes it a lot of fun? Does that make sense?
Yes. I was just about to make that point. Last week I talked about Ember Knights, and kind of one of the things that I lauded about that game is how clean and fast and focused it is. And I think this game is on the opposite spectrum, on the opposite end of the spectrum. It is messy and a lot and kind of overwhelming. I think for some people, that's a real plus because there's just so much to dig into. And it is a game where there's so much content. Your run is going to have so many different elements to it. You have so many options. There's like character classes that give you different kinds of bonuses. There's things you can turn on and toggles you can turn on and turn off to just change the game world in interesting ways to make it more challenging for yourself. You can like, it's so much to dig into that. I think for some people, that's going to be catnip. That's going to be what they're looking for. For me, it felt like a little too much. And maybe that's because I play a lot of these and I'm not going to make this my one of these games that I'm digging into for long periods of time. But it's got that depth that I think will reward people that really commit to this game. But I love Ember Knights and games more like that that are just so streamlined and get me in and get me out and get me upgrading. And like I know what I want and I know what I like and I'm doing it. And it just feels like a more focused, frictionless experience. And this game is just friction everywhere, but not in a bad way. It's just in a game that's been in development 9 years way. Like it's got feature creep. It's got like so much. It's bursting at the seams with stuff. And I think overall, I'm not into the aesthetic as much as I'm into the aesthetic of other games. And I think for me to fall in love with one of these roguelikes and really want to do run after run after run, I kind of have to like being there. And I think, you know, for example, Ember Knights, Hades, a lot of these games that I enjoy, I really enjoy the world that I'm in. And I think this one is messy and gross and icky. And, you know, it's got, it's ooze and dripping and like, you know, it's got that, and it's kind of, you know, heavy metal rock and roll aesthetic to it that just isn't my jam in particular. But I think it's one that's worth checking out for a lot of people. It's called Doomsday Hunters. I bought it for $15. At that price, like, you can check this game out and see if it's your jam. There's tons to it. And it's an interesting game. It's available on Switch and on PC. And that's going to do it for the playlist and for our episode this week. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Mario Rivera, thank you so much for being here. It's such a joy talking to you, man.
Yeah, no, as always, just a pleasure. Thank you so much for the invite. I love being here. Love talking to you both about games, and it's a wonderful opportunity for you to just speak and just have fun.
Yeah, so. Right on. Tell folks where they can check out all the other stuff that you do online.
Yes, of course. You can find me, I guess, on X.com or whatever. Mm-hmm. I feel still, the mouthfeel of that is still not right. So,
and never will be.
Never will be. Find me at that Mario Rivera on most places, including Threads and I think Mario Rivera on Blue Sky. That's where you can find like my musings, things that I'd like to talk about, games, stuff like that. You can also follow whenever I post anything on Point in Progress, which is my YouTube channel with my fellow co-founders at youtube.com/pointinprogress. If you are excited to hear more talk about horror movies, I actually have a thing coming out, I think, the same day as this episode. So if you want to continue over there, I'm talking with my good friend Joe Mertens over at his podcast, Murders with Mertens, where we talk about the movie Demons. Mm. So check that out. It should be out the same day. So yeah,
cool,
should be fun.
Awesome. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Hopefully getting home for more than 12 hours.
Is Christian's Mail of Fort?
It's upsetting to keep using Bill of Forts. this show is on Threads, you know, in a 10th year is when you create a social media account. And so that
on an unproven platform that may or may not exist in the 2 years. Who knows? We don't know what's even happening.
We just follow the rules as they are laid out. Whenever you start a podcast, yes. And Mario can speak to this as well. Mm-hmm. Whenever you start a podcast, you get a rule book. And in that, you know, it says that in year 10, you start a social media account on a new social media platform owned by a legacy social media company. And so we're excited to be there. It's DLC Hype Train on Threads. There was a really fun thread this weekend about games that folks are playing. And one game that we have not mentioned on this show, and I don't know if maybe we'll find a guest that put a lot of time into it, but a good amount of listeners, based on a sample size of Threads, is Pikmin 4. I have a small Pikmin 4 anecdote from at the Nintendo store when I was in New York City. They had a bunch of PlayStation stations set up to play games. They did not have any PlayStations, but stations set up
it's to very
play
odd,
games. Yeah.
Welcome to the Nintendo store. Please step up to pick a PlayStation game to check out.
Hey, if the 90s had gone a different way, they would have been PlayStations.
That's possible. True. True.
But they had several set up, and the Pikmin 4 stations, I spent took two separate trips to the Nintendo store in New York. The Pikmin 4 stations were virtually empty. The Mario Kart Tour stations sometimes had lines.
Well, supposedly
pure anecdotal.
That's not representative, or maybe it is just in our country, because evidently Pikmin 4 in Japan is crushing.
And per Threads listeners or followers of DLC Hype Train on Threads, it is crushing and is awesome. So again, I know we have not given it much airtime, but I wanted to give a shout out to those listeners playing Pikmin 4 and loving it, and it reviewed very well. As well. And then the last thing I'll say is that indeed, there's of course, another episode of Feeling This Friday dropping. The last Friday's episode, we got into a discussion about gamey games and games that focus a little more on realism. And we talked about Horizon some in terms of its checkpoint systems versus Alien Isolation, and how both use something that exists in that world, but they present it in different ways, and how Horizons is a little bit more video gamey, whereas Alien Isolation does something that is a little more grounded to that universe, and kind of how both versions can make a game better depending on the game they're trying to be. So again, that's available for all patrons, and you can sign up at patreon.com/DLCpod.
I would say you could follow me on things, but I don't even know anymore. Like, what's the point? What's the point of social media? So instead, I will tell you other shows you can listen to me on, including the Filmcast, where we talk about movies and TV shows. Very spirited summer of movie going. We're doing our Barbenheimer. We did the Oppenheimer first. We're doing the Barbie this week. We got precious few weeks left where there will actually be new content. Everything's getting delayed. Everything's getting pushed to 2024. So, you know, there may be a very interesting road ahead for the Filmcast where we talk about, I don't know, old stuff, I guess. We'll find out. You should
Welcome
be with
the Filmcast, again, you know, the podcast show where we discuss foreign reality shows on this yes. week's show. Dave would love that, actually. Yeah. This has been his plan. God. This has been his plan.
It's all coming together for him. I also do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns. You can find it at wehaveconcerns.com. It's good fun. And a sports show called The Fan-Controlled Show every Thursday. You can find all of that stuff wherever you get podcasts or video, for that matter. Yeah, go searching. You'll find me. Also, you can email us here, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift. Mario, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yes, and I'm a little shocked that I'm going to say this. But there was a release on the Peacock, which, of course, is the NBC streaming platform, if you have it, or if you want a free trial, check it out. But there is a new show out there that is based on a video game. You know, we're having such a great flourishing time when it comes to either Arcane, Cyberpunk, Edgerunners, Mario the Movie, you know, Last of Us TV show, which I just got my DVD. I'm very happy about. I could also recommend Twisted Metal, which is something I, like I said, didn't think I was going to do, because I saw the trailer originally and I was like, this is going to be a dud. This isn't going to be my thing. However, pleasantly surprised, Twisted Metal is a whole lot of fun. So I wanted to at least actually speak upon it, because it kind of just got dropped on Peacock. There are some minor, you know, publicity for it, but obviously with obviously going on with the SGA and the WGA and everything happening over there in SAG-AFTRA, not a lot of people are promoting their stuff. So I at least want to at least talk about something that's probably just going to get dropped on, since I have no affiliation with that. But at the very least, Twisted Metal is the show based on the PlayStation Classic game that I didn't know had lore, but apparently it does. But that does not matter, because it's just a pure comedy show starring Anthony Mackie, and I believe her name is Stephanie Beatrice, and a wild array of comedians and characters that you'll find throughout the show. And it's basically just like the midnight run of a TV show, but done in the same humor of Deadpool or Zombieland or just some not needing to take anything seriously. This is just has a lot of charm to it, a lot of fun, a lot of goofy moments. It is absolutely abhorrent and silly and bloody and all the fun things that you would think of Twisted Metal. Shout out to, of course, Samoa Joe doing the body embodiment of Sweet Tooth on this show. But what I Will Arnett plays the voice, oddly enough. There's just something so innately dumb about the concept of Twisted Metal that they somehow found and cracked the nugget of just the goodness that it can come from a silly concept, as for a sort of like car battle shooter, you know, like a destruction derby with, you know, cars with guns and stuff like that. They somehow managed to find the humanity in that, oddly enough, with gross out stupid humor. And I think that Twisted Metal, beyond reason, found that core with Anthony Mackie, who's fantastic on the show, and all the other creators and other people that are surprises and people in this. Will this get a season two? Who knows? But I'm glad that we're still in this uptick of like great adaptations and giving new life to video game properties that may or may not have lore, which this one apparently did. I don't want to anger people that love it, but I think that this is such a good starting point for just for fun. If you want to have a mindless fun show, sort of like in the vein of, in my opinion, it kind of reminds me of like a dirty version of like a Parks and Rec meets like a Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is a weird thing to say because it's a road movie, a road show, but it just has that look and feel of those shows for some reason in Twisted Metal.
Well, there you go. I'm very glad to hear this is entertaining you, because I have not checked it out and I wasn't planning to, but now I might.
I would say if you're going to check it out, it's 30-minute episodes, 10 episodes. It's a breeze. I would say if you try the first hour, and then if you don't like it, that's fine. If not, give it a shot.
Very cool. Twisted Metal on Peacock. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
We talked about it a little bit on last Wednesday's paid DLC episodes. That is what inspiring this. And it is to go see some live theater wherever you live. It doesn't need to be touring Broadway or anything like that. But I think, as we talked about, AI dredging the internet for content yet again on this week's show, I think there is something very special about seeing human beings performing. And I think it is something that, and not watching each other while we poop, are what separate us from the animals. And anything live, I think we'll do. Sporting event.
There are live theater shows, I will say. There are certain theaters that...
Okay, so don't go to those shows where you're watching Jeff poop. But like any other live theater show, I highly recommend it.
Senior
and I know...
thesis. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, it's go
a special
find
version of Spring
that.
Awakening.
Go find, okay. I retract everything I said. There's only one thing that separates us from the animals. We don't watch each other poop enough. That is the difference. We need to watch it more. But I know that seeing live theater is difficult. It's not as easy as it should be. It's not as accessible as it should be. But I think that if you are able to take the time, the mental energy, and the effort to go see people perform live, I think it will change you. And if you haven't in a long time, I think it's worth doing again. And it certainly refilled my cup. And I would recommend everybody put in the little bit of work it might take to go get it done.
I second that notion for sure. I want to recommend a show on Apple TV Plus. I think I'm starting to doubt myself. I think that's where it is. It's a new documentary about Stephen Curry. It is called Stephen Curry Underrated. I am Bay Area born and raised. I love the Golden State Warriors. I am a fan of Stephen Curry. I have been for a long, long time. But I think anybody that's a fan of decent human beings doing great things would get something out of this documentary. It's not really even about the NBA. This focuses on his collegiate career at Davidson College, where he had to go. He wanted to go to a big, more prestigious basketball school, couldn't get in because he was undersized. People didn't think he could make it. Now he is one of the most, you know, decorated NBA players of all time. Has the record for most three-pointers ever, has multiple NBA championships, and people thought he couldn't play, hence the underrated title. This is a very inspiring documentary. It made me emotional. I think it's beautiful. It really focuses on not only his what it takes to be great on the basketball court, but it focuses on his desire to actually get his college degree, which he did after having already won three NBA championships. So didn't need the money, you know, didn't need a fallback position. He just did it because he thought it was important. His family thought it was important. And I think it's very inspiring. A very good documentary, Stephen Curry, Underrated. Check it out. We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Philip from Cincinnati. Philip writes, first off, I want a second Christian's parting gift, Natural Beauty by Ling Ling Huang. I went to school with Ling Ling, and I can assure you and the listeners that if you purchase this book, not only are you getting a great product, but you're also supporting an incredible person. In addition, I'm pretty sure the book has already been auctioned to HBO, so if you read it now, you'll be way ahead of the game on the next big show. My parting gift, however, is for the parents and kids who listen to DLC, of which I know there are many. It's another podcast that my family of four has become really attached to over the past year or so. It's called Little Stories for Tiny People, and it features the work of writer, reader, and host Rhea Petcher. Pechter? I guess Pechter. There are a few reoccurring characters in her stories and some standalone ones, as well as a sleep train series that is meant to help your little ones fall asleep with pleasant images in their minds. Our two-year-old regularly asks for Hedgehog Story, one of her recurring characters, and us parents have found these stories entertaining as well, often wanting to finish the story even if our son has already fallen asleep. I hope this can be a good gift for parents who are trying to get away from screen time but are still looking for engaging content for their kids. Thanks for the show and all that you put out into the world. Thank you, Philip. I am going to check this out. Little Stories for Tiny People, the podcast. This seems like a perfect thing for my little people, my tiny people. If you'd like to suggest a parting gift on our show, please send it to us. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. We love getting them. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks again to Mario Rivera and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those awesome bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get swag for the show at dlcswag.com, which comes courtesy of Jesse J. Anderson. Thank you for that. Our biggest thanks, however, are reserved for our patrons who make this show possible at patreon.com/dlcpod. Thank you for your generosity. Thanks for supporting us. Our top tier patrons, the Hype Train patrons, get their names read out at the end of every episode, which we're going to do right now.
Hello, friends. No song, no singing. Just sincere thanks from my Tahoe Pillow Fort to our Hype Train patrons for helping make this show possible. Thank you, Taylor Wiggert, Josh Peek, Nick Strauss-Klein, Michael Stadler, Jackson, Travis, Soren Silk, Yick, Zachary White, Nate, Jenny, Scott Hughes, Jimmy Radcliffe, Mitchell Ness, Jeff Luxack, Matt Bradley, Victor Venezuela, Cheesy Bob, Hank Patton, Rob Rixman, Riley Knox, Kyle Starr, Michael S., Relentless Rex, Curtis from Louisville, comedian Aaron Trahan, Sharu Ken, Scott Lambert, Joe DeFrank, Stephen T. Seifert, Tyler Buckwild Brode, Dwayne T. Robinson, Rob Wonder Rob Dominguez, Kevin Eddy, Brian Jordan, Hyperboy 66, David Epp, John Cisco, Matt Valdez, Andy Joyce, Anthony Gulas, Dan Flanagan, Sasan, Adam Denby, Scooby Diesel, Jonathan Talbert, Chris Zacharias, Will with 1L Harris, Jonathan Putney, Mark Gowland, Malcolm King, Dan Palmino, Ben, Kevin Brazel, Stu Goss, Jonathan Spiceman Forever Schlepplefer, Albert Verhel de Dios, Spiceman Silencer, Mike Lombardo, Michael Buck, Peter Olberg, Jad, Christian Bravery, Octavian Ratziu, and Jason Novak. Thank you all so much, and thank you for putting up with my travel mic these last few weeks. I look forward to being home and getting the VOD versions going again very soon. Thank you all very much.
All right. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.